We're holding on Chof Omud Beis, second line from the bottom. We discussed the Mishnah had told us that that if the Yavama is also to the Yavam by an Isur Kedusha or Isur Mitzvah. So we said Isur Mitzvah means the Shnius, which we're going to talk about in more detail soon. And Isur Kedusha was the various Isurim that are specific to Koyanim, as far as, for example, not marrying a divorcee or a Koyan Gadol marrying an Almana, or also the ones that apply to the Jewish people in general from the, because of their Kedusha, such as not to marry a Mamzer. Anyway, so we said that if the Yavama is one of those, nevertheless, since Kedushin would have been Toifus on a Daraisa level, then therefore they need Chalitza, but they can't, there still is a Zika, they can't just be Potter completely, but they can't do Yibum, but they do have to do Chalitza. And we discussed why it is, why wouldn't we say Eser de Chalois, Eser, etc. So now, second line from the bottom of Chof Omud Beis. Itman, Bias Kohen Gadol Ba'almana. Suppose the Kohen Gadol is over on that, and he has relations with his Yavama, who is an Almana. Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Lazar, so Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Lazar disagree what the din would be. Chad Omar Eina Peteres Tzarasa. One said that she does not thereby pater this Almana's Tzara. So if Reuven had two wives, one of whom was an Almana and one was not, and his brother Shimon, who is also the Kohen Gadol, had relations with the one who was an Almana. So one opinion over here would say that the other one is not potter, and she's going to still need chalitza. V'chad oma peteres tzarasa. The other one says that it patters them from chalitza, and he's still going to need to divorce her, but instead of chalitza, he'll do a get. So the Gemara adds. Now, if the woman was an almana after full marriage, we're there, as we learned previously, not only there's the iser of almana, but there's also the Kohen Gadol was over on the eser of only marrying a besula. So kula amalei pligi b'lei patra, then everybody would agree that she doesn't patra the tzara, the ain eser doicha loisese v'eser, because as we learned before, the eser of yibum does not override the loisese and the eser of of that she's an almana and not a besola. Ki pligi ba almana mina erisin. The machloikas would be where the woman is an almana only after erisin. So she's still a besola, but the fact is she's an almana. So now you have an eser versus a lois eser. So manda oma peteres. So the opinion that says that she patos with tzara would say, look, osi eser v'docha es lois eser. Look, after all, an eser overrides a lois eser. So therefore, the whole concept that he shouldn't marry her is, as we learned yesterday, d'rabbanan. We went through a number of possibilities why it should be, and we ended up saying the reason is because it's true that the first bia would be mutter, but the second one would not. And so the chachamim made a gzera not to do even the first one because you might come to do the second one where there's no mitzvah of yibum, and he's still being over on the fact that he was supposed to marry a besula. But therefore, on a daraisa level, the yibum was valid, says this opinion. Therefore it patters her tzara, just like in any case where you do yibum or chalitza with one woman from a family, and then it helps the other one as well. Omando ama ene peteres, whereas the opinion that says that she doesn't patter would say loy osi esse v'doche es loy sese, because in this case the esse does not override the loy sese, given the efshe b'chalitza, because you could accomplish the same thing. You could accomplish the essay by doing chalitza without being over on the lav, without being over on the lav. We're talking about the lav of marrying an almana. So he could have done chalitza. In that way, he's accomplishing both. He's doing the mitzvah of chalitza, which we're considering to be equivalent to the mitzvah of yibum. And on the other hand, he's not being over on marrying an almana. So therefore, that opinion would say, in this case, we don't say eser doicha lois eser. You only say eser doicha lois eser, he says, where there's no other way to accomplish the eser. The Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction. We learned in a braisa yesterday where we had several cases of men who are not allowed to marry born Jewish women. We had, for example, Suadako Khrushchevka, people who've been damaged in their, whose genitals have been damaged, which we're going to learn in more detail about later in our Masechta, a Swiss Adam, which is to say a similar idea where a person has been castrated by human beings, as opposed to, as we learned yesterday, where he became sick and those organs stopped working, or as opposed to where he was born that way. Anyway, so the Braisa says that they're not supposed to do Yivam, the Imbalu Konu, but if they did have relations with the Yivama, then they were Kone. It is a valid Yivam, Tiyukta. So therefore, so that's a clear contradiction against the opinion that says that by a Kohen Gadol with an Almana, it wouldn't work, because the same logic applies. In both cases, we're talking about a Lav. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an Almana. A Tzuadak or Khrushchevka are not allowed to have relations with a Bas Yisrael. But in that case, we say that they were Kohen. So the same thing should apply to the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, so that's a clear contradiction on the opinion that says otherwise. So the Gemara says, Lema Tem and Nami Tiyukta did a Shlokish. Does that mean that we've also slugged up Rish Lokish's idea? He's the one who said this idea that if you can accomplish the Eseh without being over on the Lois Eseh, then you're obligated to do that. So here, and the Gemara deduced from that, therefore, when you did do the essay by violating the lois essay, where it wasn't necessary, then we said it doesn't work. So does that mean we've slugged up the Shlokish's idea as well? And the answer is not necessarily. I'm talking about where you're accomplishing the same exact mitzvah, and you could have accomplished it without being over on the lois eseh. Then we're saying that you shouldn't do it, and you're not yotzeh. Here, Rish Lakish would say that chalitza instead of yibum is not a mitzvah. Meaning, not it's not a mitzvah at all, but it's not the same kind. It's not the same kind of mitzvah. Which actually some Mephoshim talk about. Now we learned very briefly at the beginning of the Masechta, and we're going to learn in more detail in the fourth parak about the question which mitzvah takes precedence, chalitza or yibum. We're going to have an opinion of Abba Shol versus the Chachamim. Now, what Rish Lakish is saying over here on the face of it is only according to the Chachamim that yibum is preferable to chalitza. On the other hand, according to Abba Shol, if we say that chalitza is preferable to yibum, then maybe not. But not necessarily. Mephoshim discussed that even according to Abba Shol, he may mean that in principle Yibum should be preferable. But as he's going to say, unless you know that the guy is doing Yibum purely l'shem Shemayim, then it's really not so good. But in other words, in principle, on a daraisa level, it still should come ahead. So therefore, you could argue, even according to him, then you can say that doing chalitza instead of yibum is still not accomplishing the mitzvah in the real way that it was supposed to be done. And therefore, Rish Lakish would say, my rule still applies, that over here, when it comes to doing the mitzvah of yibum, then there's no way to accomplish it without being over on the lav, because the yavama is an almana. So therefore, so he shouldn't be doing it derabanan, as we're saying, but deraisa it would still work. So now let's start talking about the shnius. We said in the Mishnah that we have there's isur shnius, there's isur mitzvah, cases where the woman is also to the yavam on grounds of a mitzvah, and we said the mitzvah is the fact that mitzvah l'shmoya divrei chachamim. We have to listen to what the chachamim say, namely that they asked various shnius. So let's start talking about that. Omar Rava remez l'shnius min haTorah minayim. Where do we have in the Torah a hint for the concept of shnius? Shenema, the pasuk says at the end of the parasha of Arayis, ki es kol ha-te'eves ha'el asu anshei ha'aretz, all of these disgusting things the people of Eretz Yisrael, meaning the Knanim, the seven nations in Eretz Yisrael, did all these kinds of incestual relationships. And therefore, as the pasuk says, the land is spitting them out and you're taking over instead. But why does it use the word ha'el? The simple meaning is, it means ha'el like ha'ela, these. But the word ho'el, we're understanding, means koshes. The word ho'el can also mean harsh, tough, strong things. As we're going to explain in a second, where we see that the word ho'el means that. Miklal, the ikarakas. So the implication is, the Torah is telling us that there are very harsh arayas, namely the ones that are awesome in our Torah, and then implying that there are also softer ones, ones where there's also an issur, but it's a softer kind of issur. Umay ninhu shnias, namely the shnias, which are also drabanan. So the Gemara says, Umay mashma de ho'el lishna de kashru. Where do we see that the word ho'el means hard, means harsh? Dichtiv es eile ha'aretz lokach. You have a pasuk in Yechezkel that describes when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and took Yechonia and the Choresh v'Hamaskir into Golos, and then set up Tzidkiyahu with the new king. So the pasuk describes it with the words "Ves Eile Ha'aretz Lokach." He took the Eile, the strong people of the land. So we see that the word "el" means strong, and therefore "ha'el" means the strong, harsh kinds of arayas. This is, by the way, also when we have "kael" as a name of Hashem, that's also it means the strong one. Okay, so the Gemara says, Lema pliga de Rablevi. Well, do we have to say that this statement, that ho'el, means that arayas are a very harsh thing? Should we say pliga de Rablevi, that disagrees with Rablevi? The Omer Rablevi, kosha oinshan shal midos, yosem oinshan shal arayas. Rablevi says that actually the punishment for having dishonest weights and measures, which the Torah warns us about in a few places, the punishment for those is worse than the punishment of arayas. Because by midos, or just the opposite, because by midos, the Torah uses the word ele, the usual word, ele, which means these, but he's understanding that the word ele is even harsher, is even stronger than the word ale. So because by midos it says shezen nema ben ale, by arayas it says ale, as we said, kias kolot avis or ale, by midos it says shezen nema ben ale, and by midos it says ki soyav as Hashem kol oise ale, so and ale kosher the ale kosher me ale, so he would say so the question was shezen nema ben ale, so we see that Rabbi Levi is saying on the face of it that ale is stronger than ale, whereas over here we're saying that ale is stronger, it is strong, and implies that they're strong and therefore it means that they're a weaker arayas. So the answer is okay. It means ale kosher, the ale kosher, ale. It means that it's not a contradiction. Rav Levi is saying that they both fit together. The word ale by itself means something harsh, and the word ale goes beyond that and means even harsher. So therefore, Sir Ablevi can still say that the punishment for false midos is worse than the punishment for arayas, because it says ale, but that doesn't change the fact that ale by itself can mean harsh and strong. So the question is, Gabi arayas nami hoksiv ale. By arayas also it says ale, because afterwards, a couple of psukim later, by at the end of the parasha of arayas, it says ki kol asher yase mikola te'eves ho'ele. So it uses both expressions. The answer is ahu l'ma'utim midos mikores. That comes to teach us that you shouldn't think that if a person does false measurements that he gets kares. After all, a person gets kares for all the arayas. You would think if Rav Levi is telling us that the punishment for false weights is worse than the punishment for arayas, so you would think that means he gets kares for that as well. By saying ela, by saying both, ale by arayas teaches us that there are harsh ones, implying that there are also more lenient ones, ones that are also only drabanan. And then the word ale teaches us that only when a person does these things, namely arayas, does he get kares, but not false weights and measures. So the question is, elamai chumrayu. Well, then what is the chumra? In what sense is Rav Levi saying that the punishment for false weights is worse than the punishment for arayas? If arayas, a person gets kares, and false weights and measures, he doesn't, then in what way are they worse? The answer is hani efshe b'tshuva, hani le efshe b'tshuva. The answer is, when a person does tshuva for these things, arayas, he can do full tshuva. And so Rashi explains, if he didn't father a mamzer from it, then okay, as long as he does proper tshuva, then his aveda is cleaned up. As opposed to midos, or not really cleaned up, fine. I mean, he still may have to suffer consequences. The Gemara discusses in Yoma, he may need yisurim. But in other words, at least there's no lasting after effect of his aveda that still continues. He did whatever he could. As opposed to by midos, what happens if a person has false measurement? It means with that he was
he was stealing from many different people. So eventually, when he wants to do tshuva, it's impossible for him to actually restore. It's impossible for him to repay everybody. Now he could. The Gemara says over there. In the Gemara says that what he should do is yisak and behind tzorchei rabim. He should do tzorchei rabim with them. And the idea being that this way, eventually, the people who were defrauded will eventually benefit from that. But still, that's not. It's the best he can do under the circumstances, but it's still not. You can't say that he's definitely given back every penny to every person that he owes. So therefore, in that sense, midos are worse because the after effects of them are worse because there's no way to completely fix it up as opposed to our eyes. Okay, so that's one source in the Torah. So Robert is saying there's a remez for the concept of shnius from this word, a te'eves ha'el, implying that there are stronger te'eves and weaker te'eves. Rabbi Yehuda Omar Mehocha. Rabbi Yehuda says I have a different pasuk that expresses that tells us about the concept of shnius. The pasuk says at the end of Kehelas, talking about what Shlomo accomplished, the izein v'chiker. It says the izain, the literal meaning of izain is he made ewes. So he made ewes and he investigated tikkun mishalim harbe, and he set up many mishalim to teach the Jewish people Torah. So the simple meaning of it would be that izain, that he paid attention to it and he made the other people pay attention to it. But also va'omar ola omar abalazer. Kodim Shabash Shlomo, what happened was before Shlomo came, the Torah was like a basket that didn't have ears, meaning handles. The word izain, in other words, we're understanding, Meloshan Oznayim, and the word Oznayim, among other things, can mean handles. So the Torah was like a basket without handles. It was very difficult to hold on to and not to drop it. Until Shlomo came and made handles for it with the takonis that he made. Tosfos refers over here to a Gemara in Eruvin that says that he was the one who was masakin Metilas Yadayim and Eruvin, and now was so now we're saying that also that he did something as far as the shnius. So Rashi explains the whole pasuk then means the izenu, the whole half of pasuk means the izen means again we're saying he made handles for the Torah. So the previous earlier in the pasuk it says limad das asa'am, he taught the people knowledge of Torah, which means that he explained the Torah he explained it according to the Torah, and he explained it with similar things. He used mishalim to explain the Torah, and then the izen was saying he set up he made handles for the Torah, the chikir, and he investigated a tikkun mishalim harbe, and he set up many mishalim, and he warned the people to be careful not just with the dinim d'oraisa but also with the dinim d'rabbanan, as in fact the next pasuk continues the yosim mehem abnihi zohar, beyond what it says in the Torah, be careful my son, he says to his talmidim, with the words of the chacham. So does that mean does that mean that Shlomo himself made the gzeira on the shnius? Tosfos seems to say yeah, and they say that after that because the Gemara in Eruvin mentions there that there was a baskel that came out that announced that Hashem is very happy with what he did, but it doesn't mention shnius. So the implication would be that he came up with shnius only after that. On the other hand, there are Mephoshim who learn that no, the shnius were set up long before Shlomo. He just explained to the people why they're important, and in that sense, he made handles for the Torah. So there's another source for the idea of shnius. Rab Oshia Omer Mehocha. Rab Oshia says I have a third pasuk that expresses how important the institution of shnius is. A pasuk says also in Mishlei, or not also, we didn't have Mishlei before. A pasuk says in Mishlei, Praehu Al Taver Bay. The simple meaning of Praehu. Means Rashi says on the previous pasuk talks about the way of the Rishoyim. So Rashi on the pasuk over there explains that Praehu means Batlehu, like nullify it, don't follow in that way. But here the Gemara's understanding, Praehu, Rashi says, Hagdilehu, make it bigger, make the mitzvahs of the Torah bigger, Al Tavar Boi, so that you don't violate it, Stay Me Olav, turn away from it, Va'avur, and go on your way. In other words, make sure, so it's the concept of making a fence around the Torah. Make the Torah bigger, make the mitzvahs of the Torah bigger with gzeiros and takonis, such as the shnius, so that you don't come to be over on the isurim of the Torah. as we're going to have the example soon in the Gemara, we're going to start talking about what exactly is also under the category of Shnius. For example, Midaraisa, a man's not allowed to have relations with his mother. Midarabanan, also not with his grandmother. So that's an example of making a fence around the Torah so that from doing one, he doesn't come to do the other. And the Pasuk is telling us, Pra'ehu, make it bigger, al tavabo, so you don't pass through it. So you don't violate it. Amr of Ashi Moshal of Oshi Lamar Dabadrama. So what's the comparison that we can use to understand what Rab Oshi is saying? La Odam Meshamer Paradis, like a person who's guarding an orchard. Meshamer Bibachutz, if he guards it from the outside, Kula Meshamer, then he's able to guard the whole thing because he can walk around it and make sure that nobody's breaking in anywhere. Meshamer Bibachnim, but if he sits inside the orchard, Shalafon of Meshamer, Shalachravate Meshamer, only what's in front of him is he going to be able to guard. Whatever's out of his sight, whatever's behind him, he's not going to be able to guard. So the same thing, in other words, Shlomo is telling us, it's not just good enough to guard from within the orchard. You have to go outside it, go into areas that would have been mutter, daraisa, and make them also drabanan, and that way you'll be sure that the whole orchard will be preserved. And the Gemara says, v'hod derav ashi bedusi. Actually, this that Rav Ashi is saying is not even correct. The word bedusa literally means a fiction. So it means, in other words, the Gemara is completely rejecting Rav Ashi's explanation. Because Hasam shalafon of mir mishtamer, because at least the mushal is not really similar to the nimshal. In the mushal, at least the person is able to guard the part of the orchard that's within his his field of vision. At least what's in front of him is getting preserved. Hacha, but over here, ilav shnius, if it weren't for the concept of shnius, poga be'erva gofa, then a person would actually end up being mezana with the erva herself. So in other words, even in terms of the mashal, it would mean that even the part in front of him would end up getting broken into and stolen from. So therefore, Rav Ashi's mashal is not really correct. So the Aruch HaNer explains, so what was Rav Ashi thinking? So he figured that what's in front of him represents what's going on in the current generation, and what's going on behind represents in future generation. So he's saying, if it weren't for Shnias, still the Chachamim of each generation would be able to prevent people from being involved with Arayas. They wouldn't be able to prevent that the consequences, if somebody ended up doing that the consequences go to the next generation, because Mamzerus continues throughout the generations, that they might not be able to preserve, because eventually people would forget that these people are Mamzerim and they'd end up intermarrying with the Jewish people. Whereas the Gemara is saying that no, if it weren't for the concept of Arayas, even in the current generation, Basin would be unable to hold people back from being Mizana with Arayas. By the way, when we say something in the Gemara, when we say something like this, that Rav Ashi Bedusi, the Rebbe's father, Rav Levi Yitzchak, points out, the fact is it is still part of Torah. So what it means is, ultimately, Chochmosu Ritzonei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what Torah is, came up with this idea. And the same Chochmosu Ritzonei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to consider it Bedusa, that it's fictional, that's incorrect, and therefore not to use it in deciding the actual halacha. But nevertheless, it is still part of Torah, and therefore it's still part of the Gemara. So we had so far three sources, one in Chumash and two, one in Chumash, one in Kehelas, and one in Mishlei for the concept of Shnias. Rav Kahana, Omer Mehocha, Rav Kahana says, I have a fourth pasuk. The pasuk says at the end of Arayis, Ushmautim es mishmauti, you should guard my guarding, which means asu mishmeres l'mishmauti, make a guarding for my guarding. So I guarded you against having relations with the Arayis, Hashem is saying, you, Chachamim, should make a fence around that. So Omer Abaye l'Rav Yosef, Hodaraisin. That pasuk is daraisa, so therefore that would imply that the shnias are actually daraisa. But we made it clear in the Mishnah that they're only dirabanan. The answer is okay, daraisa or pirush rabanan means the basic concept that there are shnias is daraisa, and then the chachamim delineated out which ones are also and which ones are not. Let's say the kol ha-Torah nami pirush rabanan. So how is it different than the rest of the Torah? The whole rest of the Torah, Hashem gives us a mitzvah, and the chachamim explain the details. Elam Drabbanon. So no, even Rav Kahana is not saying that Shnias are Daraisa. He's saying that the Drabbanon Ukra Smachta Ba'alma, the Pasuk is an Asmachta for the concept. The Ritva says in Rosh Hashanah, we talked about it before, that when we say something as an asmachta, we don't mean that just the chachamim, we don't mean just the chachamim playing around with the words or something. It means Hashem left that hint in the Torah that if the chachamim choose at some point to make a gzera or a takana based on this, then they have a source and a pasuk for it. So the same way, Hashem, for whatever reason, chose not to make the shniyas part of the Isurim Daraisa, but he left that pasuk over there, Shmartim Asim Shmarti, as a hint to the Chachamim, should you want to make such gzera, then you have a source for it in a pasuk. Okay, so now let's talk about what are the actual shniyas. Tanan Abanan, Mahim shniyas. What exactly are the shniyas? And here you can bring out the diagrams from Mari Yavamis that I sent previously on the group, and we can follow them for some of the ones where it's going to get a little bit hairy to understand. So they start on page 42 with diagram 82. So Aim Imo, number one, his grandmother, where his mother is also Daraisa, so his mother's mother is also Drabanan. The Aim Aviv and his father's mother, same idea. By the way, the Meiri points out an interesting point. Mina Torah, a man's wife's grandmother is also to him. So why is it that's Midaraisa? So how is it that Midaraisa, his wife's grandmother, is also to him, but only Midrabanan is his own grandmother also to him? So the Meiri says, because the whole idea is, the basic idea is, the Torah asked of the Arayas that it's more likely that a man would be Mizana with. So his own mother, for example, when he's younger, when a kid is younger, he often sleeps in his mother's bed. So we're concerned that, so the Torah is concerned that when he gets older, he may continue sleeping there and have relations with her. Normally he's not gonna be like that. His grandmother is much older than him. So therefore that's not gonna happen. On the other hand, his wife's grandmother, it's entirely possible. Keep in mind, his wife herself could be much younger than him. And therefore her grandmother could also be relatively young compared to him, and therefore the Torah was more concerned about that. okay, continues the Gemara. The Eishes Achi Ha'av Min Ha'Eim. Another one is the wife of his, the father's brother, where it's a brother only from the mother's side. Aim imo ve'aim aviv, so is his grandmother, his mother's mother, or his father's mother. Sorry, ve'eshes avi aviv. The next one is the wife of his grandfather, meaning she's not his grandmother. His grandfather remarried, his father's father remarried, and now she's a shnia to him. She wouldn't be also daraisa, only drabam. Ve'eshes avi imo, and the same thing, the wife of his mother's father. Same idea. Ve'eshes achi ha'av min ha'em. The next one would be the wife of his brother from the mother's side. So there you have the second part. There you have the second part of diagram 83. For some reason, Shimon's wife is out of frame. But anyway, suppose that you have Reuben and Shimon are brothers from the mother's side. And Reuben has a son called Chanoich. Shimon has a wife who's out of frame over here. So now, if Shimon dies or divorces his wife, then Chanoich would be also to marry her midrabanan. Midaraisa, he would have been mutter, because midaraisa only if Shimon is a brother to Reuven from the father's side, would he be also daraisa. Midrabanan was saying also because they're brothers from the mother's side. Next, ve'eshes achi ha'eim min ha'av. The next one is the wife of the mother's brother from the father's side. So in other words, your mother has a brother where they share the same father. That brother has a wife. That wife is your aunt by marriage. So again, midaraisa would only be an issue only if it was your father's brother. So midarabanan, it's also if it's your mother's brother. The kalas b'noi, another one is his son's daughter-in-law. So your granddaughter-in-law. So we turn now to diagram 85, the first part. So Yaakov has a son Yosef, who has a son Menashe. Menashe is married to a woman named Chana. So Chana would be an erva to Yaakov. Midaraisa, Yosef's wife, would be an erva to Yaakov. Midrabanan, now we're saying so is Menashe. The kalas b'toi, the same way the daughter-in-law of his daughter, same idea. So those are all the shnius. Now, umutu adam be'eshes chomer, a man is allowed to marry his father-in-law's wife, meaning that if his father-in-law was, so his father-in-law had two wives, so one of them is the mother of his wife, so there's diagram 86, you have Yosef had two wives, Leah and Esther. From Leah, with Leah, he has a daughter, Zilpha, who marries Moshe, so Yosef is now Moshe's father-in-law. So Leah, of course, is off limits to him, Midaraisa, as his mother-in-law. That would be his wife's mother is Daraisa. Esther, though, is only related to him through Yosef, his father-in-law. So we're saying that would be Mutter. Mutter Adam Ba'eshes Chamiv, Moshe, if Yosef dies or divorces Esther, then Moshe would be allowed to marry her. Now, here's where Tosfos points out that actually the Yerushalmi says that no. She's also... He's also mishum maris ayin. It's also because it makes it look like since Zilpah, Moshe's wife, grew up in that household, it looks as though Esther was her mother, and therefore people who see him marrying her are going to think that you're allowed to marry your mother-in-law. So in fact, Tosfos mentions that it happened once in Provincia in southern France, where somebody was already, he had his entire wedding still there prepared, where he was going to be marrying a woman like that, the woman who previously had been his father-in-law's wife, and Rabbi Tam forced him to call off the wedding, Rabbi Tam told him that the whole Suda is lost, meaning, in other words, he can't go through with the wedding, he's going to have to do something else with the Suda. So Tosfos says maybe what it was is in later times, maybe after the time of the Gemara, then the Chachamim answered it. With that said, though, that's only Tosfos is saying that based on the Rishami. Many Rishonim disagree with the whole concept and hold that you are allowed to, because the Gemara or Gemara says that you are allowed to. The fact that the Rishami says you're not, they say is neither here nor there. So in fact, it's a machloikas between Sfardisha and Ashkenazi Shaposkim whether you're allowed to. Based on Rabbeinu Tam's precedent over here, so in Shulchan Aruch it brings both the Mechaber brings that you're allowed, and then Ramah brings the Yesha, and then Ramah brings from Rabbeinu Tam over here that you're not allowed. So practically speaking, that would be an example of a difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Would such a marriage be allowed? Ashkenazim would not allow it. Sfardim would. There is a very interesting idea that Rav Moshe Feinstein wants to say in that connection, that he says that nowadays we can't have two wives because of Chedem Dera Ben Gershim. So therefore, only if the scenario was, let's say that Leah died or was divorced when Zilpah was very young and then Esther took over as her stepmother, then we would apply this Gzera. But otherwise, he says, if Yosef only married Esther when Zilpah was already grown up, then he says there wouldn't be an issue anyway, because then it's very clear that she's not her mother. However, Rav Moshe himself says that this is a big chiddush, and I'm not so sure I want to follow it lahalacha unless others agree with me. But he does mention this concept. Okay, continues the Gemara. Over Eishes Chorgoi, a man is also allowed to marry the ex-wife of his stepson. So there we have diagram 87, where Binyamin is Adam's stepson. He's born from his wife who had previously been married to somebody else. Now this Binyamin is married to Miriam. So Adam would be allowed to marry Miriam after Binyamin dies or divorces her. But also Bevas Chorgoi, but he's also to marry the daughter of his stepson. Because that would be the granddaughter of his wife, and the Torah tells us you can't marry the granddaughter of your wife. V'chorgoi mutar b'ishtoi, vice versa, his stepson would be allowed to marry his own ex-wife, ubitoi, and his daughter. V'eishes chorgoi emeresloi. So in effect, the wife of his stepson in diagram 87, that would be Miriam. In effect, she could tell Adam, "Ani muteres lach ubiti asur lach. I'm mutter to you, but my daughter would be osur." An unusual thing, but still, that's how it is. So we're gonna just start discussing in the Gemara why it is, or what the logic behind which ones are also and which ones are mutter. The Gemara asks, Bas Chorga Jaraisi, what are you telling me that in diagram 87 that Shifra is also to Adam on the grounds that that she's the daughter of a stepson? Well, why are we even mentioning that in this connection? That's Daraisa. Dichtiv es bas b'no b'es bas b'ita. After all, the Pasuk says that once you've married a woman, you're also to have relations with her daughter's daughter or her son's daughter. Here, Binyamin is her son, Shifra is her son's daughter, and therefore she's also Daraisa. So why are we mentioning that when we're talking about the Shnias? And the answer is Mishum de Kabari Lamisni Sefer, because the Braisa is going to continue. Eshe Schurga Emeretz Loi, this kind of thing, where the wife of his stepson, Miriam, is able to say to him, Ani muter eslach uviti asuralach, I am mutter to you, but my daughter Shifra will be osur, meaning that the Braisa wants to highlight, but afagab de biti asuralach midaraisa, even though my daughter is also to you on a daraisa level, and you would think the Chachamim should have made a gzera around that. Nevertheless, like Gozer Bei Rabbanan, the Chachamim did not make the Gzeira regarding me. That's not a close enough thing where the Chachamim were concerned that you might confuse one with the other. So once we had to mention that, so therefore in the Reisha it also mentioned the daughter of his stepson, even though it's true that's not one of the Shnias, that's actually Daraisa. So the question is, if you're going to go by that logic, So why don't we say the same thing? You could point out the same kind of unusual thing with his father-in-law's former wife. You Nat Tema, she should be able to say in effect the same thing. Ani muter eslach uviti asuralach. The other way around, I'm mutter to you, but my daughter would be also to you, because her daughter would be the half sister of his wife. So in diagram 90. So in diagram 90, or I don't know why they had to redraw the diagram. If we have the previous diagram 86, which illustrates the idea of Eishes Chomiv, if Esther in that scenario had a daughter, then had a daughter with Yosef, then she would be a half sister with Zilpah, and therefore she'd be also to Moshe. Or okay, in diagram 90, where it's drawn the other way around, then we'd say that Miriam would be off limits to Adam because she'd be a half sister with Esther. But we're saying Shifra would be mutter, even though she's Miriam's mother. So why don't we highlight that point as well? Because after all, Miriam is his wife's half sister. And the answer is hapsikalei holapsikalei. The answer is because in one case we can say it definitively, and in the other case we cannot. Because in the case of Bas Chorgoi, we can always say she's off limits. In the case of the daughter of Shifra, it would depend. Is Shifra's daughter her daughter with Moshe? Well, then yeah, she's a half sister to Esther. But it could equally well be that Shifra has a daughter with some other with a previous husband, and then she's not. Then she doesn't have any parents in common with Esther at all. So then she in fact would be mutter. So we can't say as a definitive thing that it's always that the father-in-law's wife would be mutter, but the father-in-law's daughter would be osur, because it depends whether that daughter is a half sister of his wife or not. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rab, Arba Nashim Yesh Lahan Hefsek. Of these shniyas that we talked about, there are four of them it's not only that is she a sister, even if she is a half sister, we know that after Esther dies, then Adam would be allowed to marry Miriam. So we can't say as a definitive thing that Miriam is off limits to him forever, even if she is the daughter of Moshe and Shifra, therefore making her Esther's half-sister, Adam's wife's half-sister. Nevertheless, after Esther dies, then he would be allowed to marry Miriam, as opposed to with the previous case of Eishes Chorgoi, where once she's off-limits, then she's off-limits forever. So therefore, that's why the Braisa didn't highlight that thing. So the Gemara says, Amar Rab, Arba Noshim Yesh Lahan Hefsek. There are four of these women within these shnias where there is a hefsek, in other words, where the issur shnias does not extend down through the generations. It applies only to them themselves, Now, some of them, for example, ein lahem hefsek, because, for example, when we said that his mother's mother is an erva to him, not only his mother, Shnia, not only his mother's mother, but also his mother's mother's mother, and her mother, and so forth, all the way back. So, and the same thing with many of these other Shnias. But we're saying that there are four of them, Rav is saying, where there's a hefsek, where it only applies to them, but not to the generations above or below them. Nokit Rav v'yodei tlas. Rav had in his hand three. In other words, Rav was able to explain three of them, but he wasn't sure what the fourth one was. He had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that there are four, but he wasn't sure what the fourth one was. So what are the three that Rav knew? Eishes achi ha'em min ha'av. The first one is the wife of his mother's brother, where they share the same father. So that would be diagram 91 over here. So Yosef's mother Rachel has a half brother Levi. Levi has a wife Shifra. So Shifra would be a shnia to Yosef. But for example, if it went up one further generation, if Levi was not Yosef's mother. Mother's brother, but his grandmother's brother, then Yosef would be allowed to marry Shifra. So that's what we mean by Yesh Lahen Hefsek, that we don't go another generation up. That's the first one. The second one is the wife of the father's brother from the mother's side. So sort of the inverse of the previously. So you have Reuven and Shimon share the same mother. So Chanoich would be also in Shimon's wife because she's his father's brother's wife. But again, we don't extend that back another generation to say that his great uncle. So we stated his uncle's wife is also to him, but which Daraisa would only be if they shared the same father. Derabanan was saying as Shnius would be also if they share the same mother. But if they share the same mother and we go back one generation, so we're talking about his great uncle's wife, then that would be mutter to him. And the third one is Ve'eshes Achi Ha'av Min Ha'av. So that's the second one. And the third one, V'kalosoi, his daughter-in-law. So his own daughter-in-law is also to him Daraisa. His granddaughter-in-law, we said, was a Shnia. But his great-granddaughter-in-law would be Mutter to him. Uzi'iri Mosif Af Eshes Avi Imoi. Zi'iri adds also the wife of his mother's father is also the same thing. In other words, his mother's father, his grandfather from his mother's side, his wife would be also as a shnia. But if we went back another generation, then she would be mutter. Omer of Nachmi Yitzchok is simonach, the simon to remember that the which one Zeiri added the Eloi derav, that he's going one generation higher than the shnias of Rav. Because Rav is talking about two generations back, and Zeiri is talking about even three generations back and allowing it. So the Gemara says, "But Rav, my time alei choshev lei." Well, why doesn't Rav agree with Zeiri, and why doesn't he count that? Because he says, "Mechlafalei be'eshes avi ovid." Because it's too easily confused, even though it's one further generation back, it's too easily confused with the wife of his father's father, which we said would be a shnia. And after all, the whole purpose of shnias is because eventually you reach an isur daraisa, where his father's mother would be also daraisa. So therefore we don't want to allow even what Zeiri is saying, even three generations back, because it might be confused. Or Zeiri. Where Zeiri would answer to that, Lahosim Shriach Ba'ozel, Lahochol Shriach Ba'ozel. The difference is there's a difference between a father's family and a mother's family. A person is more aware of the relationships on his father's side than he is on his mother's side. To his father's side, Rashi says, Adam Rogel Leilach, he regularly goes there, so he knows who's more closely related to him, as opposed to his mother's side, not so much. For pastors in those days, because usually when people got married, usually the wife would come to live where the husband lived, which could even be out of town. So he doesn't necessarily see his mother's family that often. So therefore, Zeiri figures, when you have the mother's family involved, as we're talking about over here, his mother's father's father's wife, there's more reason to be. There's more reason to say that. that she should be mutter because he doesn't know as much the relatives on that side anyway, so therefore he's much less likely to end up marrying one of the closer ones. Whereas Rav doesn't take that view, and therefore he says both of them would be equally also. Okay. So now we said one of the ones that Rav had mentioned that there was a hefsek, he said was Kalosa, and we said was his daughter-in-law. The question is Kalosa Daraisi, his own daughter-in-law is also to him Daraisa. So why are we mentioning that together with the Shnius? So the answer is Ema Kalas Bnoi. So you're right. What we mean is his son's daughter-in-law. Ema Kalas Bnoi. So it means not his own daughter-in-law, but his father's daughter-in-law. His son's daughter-in-law. So his granddaughter-in-law. So the question is, Kalas Bnoi Yeshla Hefsik. Are you telling me that has a Hefsik? In other words, that only his granddaughter-in-law would be also to him, but his great granddaughter-in-law would be mutter? Well, Tanya, Kalosa Erva, we learn in a Braisa. His own daughter-in-law is an Erva, Midaraisa. Kalas Bnoi Shnia, but his son's daughter-in-law is a Shnia. And the same thing applies to his son and his grandson until the end of all generations, to the extent, as the Rambam phrases it, that, for example, any of us or wife would be an erva to Yaakov. So even though it's his son, etc., daughter-in-law, nevertheless, it would still be us. Ela ema kalas bitoi. You're right. We don't mean the daughter-in-law of his son. We mean the daughter-in-law of his daughter. So Rashi explains, because since the whole concept of what we're saying, which arayas are osur and which arayas are mutter, the basic idea is when there is something there where it's close to, where it's similar to one of the arayas to arayasa, then the chachamim asked it. But over here, the son's wife herself is an erva, so therefore we make a gzera also on the grandson's wife and the great-grandson's wife, etc. But with the daughter, your daughter obviously can have a wife, so therefore the whole concept that her daughter-in-law should be also is only dirabanan, and therefore we don't need to extend that to all the generations, because it's not going to be confused with anything which is also daraisa. So the Omer of Chista. So in fact, Rav Chista says in this connection, Hom milstami gavra rabba shmiyali, I heard the following statement from a great man, from a great Talmud Chacham, Umanu Rav Ami, namely that was Rav Ami, that he said, Loi ostru kala ela mipnei kala. They asked a daughter-in-law only because of a daughter-in-law. So what does that mean? So we have to figure it out. V'omruli kaldoi. So now Rav Chista continues, Stargazer has told me, Malfona habes, you are going to be a teacher. So what kind of teacher? So Amina. So I thought to myself, E gavra rabba habena, if that means I'm going to be a great man, meaning a Talmud Chacham, and I'm going to be teaching people, and I'm going to be teaching Talmidim in a great yeshiva, then aspera midaiti, then I have to be able to figure this out myself in order to be able to reach that level of Torah learning. E makri daudike havena, but if it means that I'm only destined to be a melamed of children, ashayla min abonon to osalavei knishta, then what I'll do is when I'm teaching the kids in cheder, I'll be teaching them in the local shul. So then I guess I won't be able to understand it myself, and I'll have to ask the chachamim when they come to shul and ask them what this means. Hashka savarta midaiti. Now Rav Chista says, in the end, I was able to figure it out myself. Meaning, in other words, that now he's showing that he has what it takes to eventually become a great Rosh Hashiva, which of course he did. So what does it mean? Loi osu kalas bitoi elamishim kalas b'noi. The only reason why, to begin with, why the Chacham even say that a daughter is daughter-in-law should be also. After all, there's no similarity to the daughter-in-law that in the Torah, because after all, like we're saying, the daughter herself can't have a wife. So why did they ask her the daughter is daughter-in-law? Elamishum kalas b'noi, only because it might be confused with the daughter-in-law of its son, where there you have, now there, that's close enough to a daraisa, because the son's wife herself is also daraisa, and therefore now it's not considered zera la zera, because it's all considered basically one big zera. If you make a zera on one and not the other, then it's not gonna stand, because people are gonna get confused. So omalei abaya l'roba aspera loch. So Abaya says to Rabbah, let me explain to you what we mean, why we're asking one kind of daughter-in-law, because she might be confused with the other. For example, consider the daughter-in-law from the family of Tzitoi, where they have, he has sons and daughters who both have daughters-in-law, and therefore they could easily get confused. Rapapa gives an example. You have a similar thing in the family of Rapapa Baba. Rav Ashi Amuk again Kalsa Debe Mori Bar Issa, and Rav Ashi gives an example with the family of Mori Bar Issa. So what it is Tosfos says each one is giving an example who lived in their times. There's no real nafkamina between them. On the other hand, I mean, Meforshim say, so what, we need to give three different examples? Isn't it obvious what it means that a person has sons and daughters and both of them have daughters who are married off? So in fact, there is an interesting idea that the Ritva and a couple of other Rishonim say that maybe what the Gemara is implying is when is the daughter's daughter-in-law also only if in that same family there is also a son's daughter-in-law. We're therefore, once we're asking one, then we ask the other as well. However, if the scenario was that the original father of the family had only daughters and they eventually have daughters who they married off, then maybe the Gemara is implying that they wouldn't be usher to the old man, to the grandfather-in-law of these women, because there's no kalas b'noi to mix them up with. However, the halacha is not like that. So another possibility is actually that all of these women tended to be called the daughter-in-law of Dvei Bar Tzitoi, or Dvei Rapapa, Ba'aba, or so forth. In other words, when people were talking about these women, they didn't call them Pliny's wife. They used to call them the daughters-in-law of, or the granddaughters-in-law of Pliny, and therefore there's a real concern about mixing one up with the other. So therefore, the idea would be that the Gemara is giving all these examples because that would be the case where there's the possibility of confusion. Okay, so the Gemara says, Iboilahu. Now we have another question. Eishes achiha eim min ha'eim mahu. What about the wife of a mother's brother from the mother's side? So before we said that if the mother has a brother from the father's side, then his wife is a shniyah. But what about if they're only related from the mother's side? So there's diagram 103. Where you have Rachel, Yitzchak's mother, has a half brother David from her mother's side. Is David's wife a shniya to Yitzchak? Do we say Eishes achiha av min ha'em when it's the wife of the father's brother from the mother's side, or the Eishes achiha em min ha'av, or the wife of the mother's brother from the father's side? The ikat sad of, in both of those cases, you have fathership involved at some point. So in the one example, it's your father's brother. In the other example, it's your mother's brother from the father's side. So then we would say, Hudigazu Rabbanon. Then we would say the Chachamim made a Gzeira. Aval Hecha Delekat Sad of Legazu Behu Rabbanon. Maybe the case where we're talking about where there's no father relationship at all, because David is related to Rachel only through her mother, and Rachel herself is Yitzchak's mother, not his father. Maybe Legazu Behu Rabbanon. Maybe the Chachamim did not have a reason to make a Gzeira with that. Or maybe there's no difference. Amar Rav Safra, said Rav Safra says, of course she can't be also. He goof a gzera. After all, the whole concept of shnius is a gzera. So how can we go and make a gzera on top of a gzera? So therefore, given that, even if it were a father relationship, it would only be a shnia, then we can't answer it also if it's a mother relationship. That would be a gzera on top of a gzera. However, Omar Rabba, so Rabba says, what kind of an argument is that? After all, all of the Arayas are Gzeira L'Gzeira. Imoy Erva, his own mother would be an Erva. Aim Imoy Shnia, and his mother's mother, as we said at the beginning, was a Shnia. V'gozual Aim Ovid Meshum Aim Imoy. And then the Chachamim also added that you're also to marry your father's mother, because you might confuse her with your mother's mother. Even though, now the point is that there's more reason to make the Gzeira when it's the mother's mother, because she's more easily confused with your mother than with the father's mother, where after all, your father is anyway not an Erva to you. I mean, obviously he's off limits anyway because Mishkav Zachar, but that's another matter. But so on the face of it, there shouldn't have been a need to make a Gzeira of Aim Oviv in the first place. And yet we made that Gzeira, which is in effect a Gzeira on a Gzeira. So therefore you see that by Shnius, that rule doesn't necessarily apply. the time of my, and after all, what is the reason? After all, we know you don't make a zera like zera. The reason must be kulo debe ima rabsi korolei. The reason must be because all because both of them are equally well called grandmother. People don't distinguish in terminology between their mother's mother and their father's mother. They call both of them grandma or bubby or whatever. So therefore, one is easily confused with the other. Well then, so then by the same logic, Ashes Aviv Erva. Similarly, his father's wife would be an Erva Mideraisa. Ashes Avi Aviv Shnia. The wife of his father's father would be a Shnia. And there, that's directly because it might be confused with the case Daraisa, because a father and a grandfather you might confuse. But Gozrel Ashes Avi Aviv Avi Ima Mishum Ashes Avi Aviv. And then the Chacham extended that your mother's father's wife is also Osir, because it might be confused with Ashes Avi Aviv. The time of Mai, and again, what would be the reason? Kulu Debe Abba Rabba Korolei, because they call them all the wife of his grandfather. So then, by the same logic, Eishes Achi Ha'av Min Av Erva. So by the same logic, the wife of your father's brother, where they share the same father, would be an Erva Daraisa. If the father's brother is only from the mother's side, then his wife would be a shnia. And we can say very logically, so therefore the Chacham would extend that also we would say that your mother's brother, where they share the same father, that his wife would be also usher because of that. The time of mine, Mishum Bikulu, Debe Dirty, Karilahu. And the reason would be because all of them are considered your uncle. So now that we've established that many times when it comes to Shnias, we can actually have a Gzera on a Gzera, because in effect it's all part of the one Gzera, because otherwise you would confuse one with the other and the whole Gzera wouldn't stand. So now what would be the din about the original case that we brought up, where there's no Tzad of at all? Namely, where it's your mother's brother, where they share the same mother, but not the same father. So this is back to diagram 103, where we brought up the question. So we showed that various other kinds of things, where there's a father relationship involved, then we say it's also even when it's a little further removed from the Erva Daraisa. But what about over here, where it's really far removed, where there's no father relationships at all? Would it be osir or not? So Toshma, the ki osir of Yehuda bar Shila Omar, when Rav Yehuda bar Shila came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Amri b'mar Rava, they say in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, the rule is kol shiv nekeva erva, any case where if the relative in that position was a woman, then she would have been an erva. Then the zachar gozral ishtim mishum shnia. Then, if instead he's a man, then the Chachamim made a gzera that his wife is also on the grounds of a shnia. So therefore, for example, so applying that to our case over here, given that a father's brother's wife would be an erva, and that applies or a shnia, if they share the same mother, then they'd be only a shnia, which is the example in diagram 104. Then the rule would be, so if instead of Reuven we have Rachel, Hanok's mother, who is a half sister to Shimon, then Shimon's wife is going to be a shnia as well, because if we substituted for her Reuven, then it would be a shnia as well. So that's the rule. Omar Rabba. But Rava says, "Uklalahu." Is that a general rule? Is that always the case? I can show you a lot of counterexamples. Chamoisay erva, his own mother-in-law would be an erva, but Eishes Chom of Muteres. But we said before that his father-in-law's wife would be mutter. We said before, okay, Tosfos had said maybe at some later point they were mutter it, but certainly Medina de Gemara it's mutter. So you see that you don't say that because the father-in-law stands in place of the mother-in-law, then therefore we should make a shnia. Similarly, bas chamoisa erva, the daughter of his mother-in-law would be an erva because she's his wife's sister. Eishes ben chamosim uteres. But if instead of a daughter there, in diagrams 115 and 116, if instead of Dina, his wife's sister, if instead he had Yitzchak, his wife's brother, and he had a wife, then she would be mutter. Similarly, again, the daughter of his father-in-law is an erva, Eishes ben chomiv muteres, but the daughter of his father-in-law's son would be muter. Chiragto erva, his stepdaughter would be an erva because that's the daughter of his wife. Eishes chogim muteres, but we said before that his stepson's wife would be muter. So Rabba says it's not actually a hard and fast rule. So then we have to ask, so what does Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shila's rule add? If he's saying that they said in Eretz Yisrael the rule kol shem in a keva erva b'zocha gazru, and Rabba is saying there's a lot of counter examples. So what does that rule mean? Lav leisuya eishes achiha em min ha'em. Wouldn't it come to include the case that we asked about to begin with, where it's his mother's brother from the mother's side, and he has a wife, the kolshim in a keva erva. So we would say the rule that if the woman was an erva, then the zachar gazru ishtei mishum shnia. Then because he's a man, then we would make the zera that his wife would be considered a shnia. So the answer is that in this case, she would be an erva. After all, your mother's sister is an erva. So therefore, we're saying that her brother also, then his wife would be a shnia. So the Gemara finishes off. My shnaha. So Taka, what's the difference? What's the difference that why Taka was saying Rava had pointed out all these exceptions where we don't apply that rule? And the reason is, because there's a difference between some of these relatives are they're close to you through only one kiddushin. For example, in this case, we're talking about the mother's sister's husband. So all you needed was one kiddushin. All you needed was that brother was mekadosh this woman, and she becomes related to you. But when it comes to, for example, your stepson's wife, you don't have a relationship until you have two kiddushin, because first you had to marry the woman herself, then her son, which is your stepson, had to marry. So therefore, that's far away enough that the chachamim didn't find it necessary to make that zera. But when you have only one kiddushin involved, like over here, your mother's brother, where they share the same mother only, and he got married. Well, he could be your mother's brother, whether there was kiddushin or not, as long as they have the same mother. Then there's already reason you only need one kiddushin for this woman to be a shnia, and therefore we are in fact going to say that she's a shnia. Okay, to be continued tomorrow, Baruch Hashem.